This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. The adventures of Alibi Jones continue. This is a science fiction podcast, and I read to you from my work. We are into the conclusion, part three, of Alibi Jones' Christmas present this week. Alibi Jones traveled back through time and met his father, B.C., the Vatican assassin. But B.C. had no idea who Alibi was, and certainly hasn't got any reason to trust him, so it's not working out exactly as Alibi might have hoped. We'll find out how it wraps up, as our three-part encore presentation concludes this week with part three of Alibi Jones' Christmas present. Coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. First, a little bit of news. Remember, you can support this podcast on Patreon. And right now, one of the things I've added as a gift as you join at the $5 or above level is a free audiobook. You get a free copy of the Vatican Assassin audiobook. I'm going to be doing a lot more of that, too, giving away more audiobooks as part of my Patreon. So if you want to find out more about Patreon, more about Glow in the Dark Radio there, just go to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. And I am at Balticon this weekend. I've actually recorded this show ahead of time because I am going to be, or I am, in Baltimore, Maryland, on the Inner Harbor at Balticon, the science fiction convention. I've got five panels and a reading that I'm doing throughout the weekend. My panel schedule starts on Friday afternoon at 6. I'll be doing writing scripts based on your own work, as I help talk about turning your fiction into a script. Then on Sunday, my reading comes around at 1 o'clock. And then I do a whole bunch of panels. Sunday at 2, I've got Why the Storyteller Needs a Narrator, talking about narrating audiobooks. Sunday at 3, I've got A History of Podcasting. We'll be talking about A History of Podcasting. And I'm going to help other writers learn how to read their stuff better with improving your readings, Sunday at 5 o'clock. Then on Monday at 10 a.m., I'll be doing The Future of Podcasting as we look ahead at the future of podcasting. So those are the panels I am on at Balticon. And once again, I'm there throughout this weekend. Details at balticon.org. Of course, I'm talking about audiobooks and narrating them, because I now do professional voice work. If you would like your audiobook narrated by me, just get in touch. Or if you know somebody who's interested in having someone narrate their book, just point them towards my website, glowinthedarkradio.com. I've got a voice work page there. glowinthedarkradio.com/voice-work, but you can just go to glowinthedarkradio.com and follow the links. And that is all for news. Up next, part three, the conclusion of Alibi Jones' Christmas present on Glow in the Dark Radio.
What the hell is this, the wonderful Billy Flynn?
Just some podcast that's supposed to be geeky. Podcasting's Rich Siegfried.
Did you try it?
I'm not going to try it. You try it.
Screw that noise. I'm not going to try it. Hey, Flynnstress, let's get Mikey.
Do you mean critically acclaimed comedy rock star Mikey Mason, who hosts the Beer Power Time Machine podcast?
Yeah.
But he won't listen. He hates everything.
Hi, I'm critically acclaimed comedy rock star Mikey Mason. I don't often listen to podcasts, but when I do, make mine Geek Radio Daily.
Hey man, that's a different promo.
Between love and madness lies Geek Radio Daily.
That's kinda accurate.
There are some things money can't buy.
GRD is free online.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Geek Radio Daily.
We'll take it.
Geek Radio Daily. All the geek without the weight. GeekRadioDaily.com.
Now, here's Alibi Jones' Christmas present, part three, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
It should be right here, Alibi said. I left it right here.
BC and Alibi stood on opposite sides of the open door of a confessional booth. Inside was only an empty bench, where both had expected to see an alien box. It had taken them a while to work their way to the back of the church, having been pressed into a cleaning detail by the Reverend Gonzalez upon entering the church. BC introduced Alibi to her as his cousin, another priest, visiting as a messenger from the Vatican, who didn't know Spanish. And actually working alongside him, doing meaningless labor, he'd been warming up to the kid. But now, he was pissed.
"To think, I almost started to believe you," BC said, angry.
Alibi looked over at BC, suddenly a bit scared of him. BC continued.
"After Stefan, or Finder, called you my little brother, he saw a resemblance. Got me wondering who you were. But now, gee."
"Wait a sec," Alibi said. He leaned into the booth. There was a glimmer of something in the air. He reached out to touch it, and the glimmer surrounded his hand. The alien box reappeared. One second it wasn't there, the next it was.
What?
BC stopped making sense as he leaned into the confessional and stared at the box.
"There it is," Alibi said.
BC reached out.
"Don't touch it,"
Alibi almost screamed,
but too late.
BC touched the box. Nothing happened. BC and Alibi looked at each other as BC continued touching the alien box.
"Why?" BC asked.
Both BC and Alibi were confused. Alibi had expected BC and the box to zap out of there. Nothing happened. Even the glimmer was gone.
"You two," a woman's voice called out in Spanish.
"What are you doing?"
Alibi and BC turned and looked back out of the confessional into the church as whomever called them approached. Reverend Gonzalez emerged from the shadows. Alibi, not understanding her Spanish, thought she was angry at them, but didn't know why. BC knew her anger wasn't for him and Alibi.
"Don't bother. Skip those," she said, almost too loud. "I don't think that rich fuck is going to use our confessionals while she's down here, do you?"
"Probably not, Reverend Gonzalez," BC agreed. He smiled and tried to think himself in Gonzalez's way so that she couldn't see the bizarre box in the confessional behind him. "But now, Reverend Gonzalez, is that any way to talk about this diocese's biggest financial supporter? I'm told that rich fuck gives generously to the church." Alibi took his cues from BC. BC seemed relaxed, so Alibi relaxed. A little. He still tried to stand between the woman priest and the box behind him, blocking her vision. He couldn't understand a word the two others were saying. Alibi leaned into BC a little too much, almost losing balance. Gonzalez noticed the strange behavior and peered past the men into the confessional. Her eyebrows raised on her forehead, but she didn't say a word. She shook her head. "Simone Pos cannot buy God's grace," Gonzalez said. "She cannot buy her way out of hypocrisy." Alibi wanted to look behind him. Had she seen the box? What was she doing? What was she saying? Gonzalez leaned in to whisper at BC.
"He doesn't speak Spanish, does he, BC?"
"Nope," BC said.
"Good," she said. "I don't need him reporting me."
Gone.
One of the church's bells rang out.
"Shit,"
Gonzalez swore.
"You need to go robe up, BC," she said, suddenly all business.
"Already?" BC asked. He frowned. She pressed on, turning to Alibi. "We have to be in our places early," she said. "But this clown isn't on the seating plan." Alibi didn't know what she was saying, but could tell it wasn't good by her tone of voice.
"Maybe he should hide in the confessional," she said.
BC felt that finally gave him his opportunity to look, so he turned his head. The box was gone.
Alibi looked to BC for his reaction, and grew alarmed to see BC looked alarmed. Gonzalez started to laugh. She'd made a joke. "I'm kidding," she said. "Poe's security goons would lose their shit." Alibi was still mightily confused, but he relaxed as BC smiled again. Then Alibi glanced back for the box, too, and was glad to see it had vanished. "As it is, they won't let us leave the church now anyway," she said. "Besides, where would we go? She's taken over the rectory. Pig." BC smiled at Gonzalez. "Trying to get it all out of your system now?" he asked. "Yup," she said. "Have to, before Mass. Besides, I know how you talk off duty, BC. And he can't understand me." She smirked, and then she playfully elbowed BC. "Go get robed up," she said. "Then get set to hurry up and wait for the great Simone Pose." BC smirked. He had other plans for the great Simone Pose. He fingered his new bracelet. Alibi frowned, tired of being confused. He didn't know why his implanted translator wasn't working, but it was a problem. And now, the woman was talking to him. Or rather, looking at him, pointing at something else, and talking to BC. "But first, BC," she said, "tell your cousin to stand over there and..." Alibi Jones stood next to a holy water font at the back of the church. He'd watched every person who entered the cathedral dip their fingers in the holy water in the basin on the top of the little stout pedestal, about waist high, and then bless themselves. His job had been to watch for spillage and wipe it away with a towel Gonzalez gave him. The cathedral was packed for the Christmas Eve service. The Mass seemed to be a big deal, but Alibi wasn't sure if that was because of the holiday or because some rich woman was visiting. The place seemed to be her hometown. At any rate, it brought out a crowd. That meant a lot of fingers, lots of blessings, and yet a surprisingly minor amount of spillage. "A font attendant?" Alibi mumbled to himself. "Is that even a thing?" He looked at the slightly moistened towel in his hand. "Guess it is tonight." He'd thought about draping the small towel over one of the branches of the sparsely decorated 6-foot-tall Christmas tree that stood next to him, and the font, to dry it. But the towel was wet with holy water. Alibi realized even BC might frown on him treating holy things like dirty laundry. Besides, he didn't want to attract any undue attention to himself. Or to the tree, for that matter. He'd moved the DeVriesium box from out of the closet with the chair in it that BC called a confessional to sit under the tree next to him, where he could keep an eye on it. Well, theoretically keep an eye on it. Hard to keep an eye on something that kept cloaking itself invisible. Oh, strangely, the box would let him see it, but it then turned invisible again, especially when others approached, as if it understood when it needed to hide. It seemed to act the way Alibi wanted it to. It had brought him back here to BC when he'd merely thought about BC in the first place. Alibi wondered, and worried, just how intricately the box was now tied into his brain. "You know, Box, if you're that much in my head, you could at least translate these people for me." In the distance, up on the altar, the bishop continued proclaiming the Mass in Spanish. Alibi still couldn't understand a word he said. Alibi sighed and looked around the crowded church. It did have a certain warmth and charm. Maybe his aunt was right. Maybe they could use a little Christmas at the Hornet's Nest. He surveyed the tree next to him again, looking it up and down. "Maybe I could take this tree back with me, huh? Hope I can just think my way back when I can finally focus and concentrate on it." There had been people nearby ever since Gonzalez surprised him in BC with the box. Moving the box to keep it with him had proved challenging enough, making it visible long enough to use it, if it worked, was going to be a whole different story. If it worked, no problem. But if it didn't, Alibi would be stuck there trying to explain himself and the box, and probably trying not to get killed by BC for blowing his mission, too. A flash on the edge of his sight caught Alibi's attention. What's that sparkle next to the tree? Oh, those aren't Christmas lights. A low buzzing sound rose up in the air next to Alibi. BC's collar itched. He couldn't do anything about it. That was the problem at being up in the front row. Couldn't move. His eyes glanced from side to side. His mark was behind him. He would soon shake her hand, and she'd be dead. "And now, my brothers and sisters in Christ," the bishop said. BC kept his hands and wrists hidden by his priestly robes, and clicked the killbot bracelet from Stefan into place on his right wrist. "Let us offer one another." BC slid the bracelet down his wrist onto his hand until the nubs rested in his palm, and squeezed as instructed, releasing the killbots. Then he let the bracelet drop. "The sign of peace." BC turned, along with the entire front row of priests in the pews. A wealthy and extravagantly attired woman glared up at him. Simone Pose. BC extended his hand. "Peace be with you." Busy shaking her hand, BC didn't notice the odd glow at the back of the church. Alibi watched, amazed, as the entire crowd in front of him, the whole church full of people, erupted into a frenzy of handshaking. Even more amazing, it seemed to distract them from the Devrisium box, which had reappeared and now glowed beneath the tree. They didn't even seem to have noticed the armored Devrisium in glowing silver and bright blue, who'd appeared just behind him. Alibi recognized the alien. There were only a handful of them, after all, or there had been. They should all be gone. This was Holon, master of the Devrisium's time scanners. The alien shouted at Alibi in a filtered metallic chorus of a voice.
"You!"
"Keep it down," Alibi said, staying calm.
"I have surrounded myself and you, Alibi Jones, and the Thought Box, in a stasis field,"
Holon said.
"We are shielded from the people around us."
Around them, Alibi saw the stasis field begin to do its work. The people seemed almost frozen, now shaking each other's hands in extreme slow motion. Time was passing much more quickly inside of the field, relative to the outside world. Holon held up an arm and scanned Alibi. Alibi glared at the alien, assessing the situation, feeling newly strong and defiant, reawakened from the Christmas spell he'd been falling under by the presence of an old foe. Time to fight.
"The council had you," Holon said. "But, by my instruments, you are at least a year older than when I left you."
"I'm a later addition, Alibi Jones," he said, "from after the Time War, that you lost."
"But?"
The alien seemed confused.
"How are you here? Now? This cannot be."
"You know, I didn't mean to be here now," Alibi said. "All I did was think about my father at Christmas time, and it brought me here." Alibi pointed at the box.
"It should not work for you like that,"
Holon said.
"Yet I trace the ripples, the disturbances, here."
"Does you no good to kill me, you know," Alibi said. "It's too late. In my timeline, you already lost."
"I wonder if I can bargain with him."
Unfortunately, in their armor, they are hard to read. Alibi got honest with the Devrisium. "Think I saw you implode," Alibi said. "Don't trust the blue and purple guy either. He's not..."
Quiet!
Halone shouted.
If the time stream itself did not protect you, I will kill you now!
Okay, okay, fine, Alibi said, trying to calm the alien down. Since you can't kill me, can you help me get back to my time? All this disturbing rippling can't be good.
If you were removed, you and your damages would be forgotten,
Halone said.
The ripples quieted.
Alibi waited as the Devrisium considered. Light glinted off his silver space-time armor, and the seams glowed bright blue.
Think he's considering? Hard to tell.
The Devrisium suddenly stretched out its arms, pointing one at Alibi, one at the box. Alibi felt warmer and felt a tingling of energy, like mild static electricity, ripple across his skin. A painless bluish lightning surrounded him and seemed to fly off the box and Halone as well, connecting the three of them.
Bah,
Halone said.
If you won the Time War, my reality already unravels, and yet you remain outside of your time speeds that chaos, so I must bring you back to your original time to slow my own destruction.
With Halone evidently about to send them back to the future, Alibi entertained an entirely different thought.
Must try to slow the coming apart,
Halone said. As Halone shouted, Alibi grabbed for the Christmas tree next to him. Alibi, the tree, Halone, and the thought box traveled ahead through time in a gray-gold haze. Alibi perceived the haze taking shape and form as it became Krish's lab, as he'd left it. Sparkling glimmers filled the air as he reappeared next to Krish.
Doing? Krish finished asking him.
Watch out, Krish! Alibi shouted.
Where did that come from?
Krish asked, startled by the sudden appearance of Halone.
Ah! Aha!
Halone said. The Devrisium's head swiveled around, taking in their new surroundings.
I can feel it! The timeline no longer protects you, Alibi Jones!
Alibi noticed the alien was growing a weapon up and out of its arm, fashioning some sort of techno-organic blaster. Alibi then noticed something else. Halone was beginning to fade. Krish smirked. He saw it too.
Maybe the timeline no longer has to, Krish said.
What?
Halone said. The Devrisium looked at its arm.
No!
Yes,
Krish declared.
Oh no, Alibi said. The box too!
The box wasn't just fading. It had begun oozing an oily gray and black ooze, as if melting. It started making an odd warbling, singing sound. Halone's cry drew their attention. Until it faded out as he did. As Alibi and Krish turned back to the box, it bubbled into a fading cloud of inky black smoke. Then it imploded with a pop.
No, Alibi said.
What was that? Anita's sudden presence and question shocked both Alibi and Krish back into themselves. Neither saw her walk into the lab.
That was the Devrisium tech I had hoped to have Alibi look at, Krish said, quick on his feet. Unfortunately, as you just saw, it became unstable.
Well, that is too bad, she said. And Alibi, that won't do at all.
Alibi was confused until he realized he was still holding the Christmas tree from the church in his left hand. Well, what was left of it after traveling through time, it had gone from a full young tree about 6 feet tall to old, withered, and now only about 2 feet tall, missing most of its branches. One lone ornament still somehow clung to one branch, apparently out of sheer stubbornness. Anita shook her head and looking at Alibi's tree. Krish smiled at Anita, but gave Alibi a side-eye glance, Alibi knew Krish had already figured him out. But Krish was not telling Anita he'd found Alibi in his lab when he shouldn't have been in there.
What? Alibi said, playing innocent with his aunt. That tree, Alibi, she said, looks like Charlie Brown's. Classic children's cartoon character. Oh, look it up, Allie. You can watch it on your way to Depot.
Okay, he said.
Where did you find that thing?
She asked rhetorically. She then turned and strolled out.
Get going, Alibi!
She called back over her shoulder. Alibi looked relieved. Then Anita popped her head back inside the lab door, startling both Alibi and Krish.
And hurry back, she said. Just got word that strange man Finder is on his way here to see you. For some reason, she said.
Gotcha, Alibi said. Will do. Anita finally left them alone. Krish gave Alibi a long, disappointed look.
Okay, stop, Alibi said, finally. I know, I'm sorry, Krish.
Well, Krish said, as if finding a bright spot, you did bring back a tree. I'll give you that.
The two laughed. Then Alibi frowned.
I am sorry, Krish, he said. Sorry to sneak around behind your back. Thank you for not telling my aunt what I did.
Krish smiled as he reassured Alibi.
You are welcome, Alibi, Krish said. Consider it a gift. My Christmas present to you, eh?
Alibi thought of his father. Funny. What came back to him was a simple smile BC gave him when they were talking, cleaning the church, just a couple of hours ago.
Just a couple and 30 years ago.
Quite a gift, Krish. Greater than you can know. Alibi smiled back at Krish.
Speaking of Christmas, I better get going to Depot so I can get back and deal with the next thing, Alibi said.
He darkened a little as he thought of Stefan.
So, what do you suppose Finder wants this time?
The end. For now.
That was The Conclusion, Part 3 of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Well, Alibi still has a little bit of growing up to do, it seems like, but, you know, kind of facing those facts here now. In Alibi Jones' Christmas Present, he's let some people down. He let Krish down there, you know? So I'm not sure what we're going to be doing next week. That is part 3 of the latest Alibi Jones short story. And the latest Alibi Jones adventure. Now, I do have another Alibi Jones adventure that's going to be coming out soon. There's an Alibi Jones short comic book story in the upcoming Always Punch Nazis Volume 2, I am proud to say. Illustrated by Juan Carlos Quatordio. So that's the next thing that'll be coming our way. But it's not out yet, so I can't really reveal that next week. So I think we may be going back into the world of BC. Back to the Vatican Assassin next week. We shall see. Quick recap of the news. I'm at Balticon this weekend. You can always get details at balticon.org. And please support this podcast on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio and sign up. If you sign up at the $5 or higher level, I'll hook you up with a free audiobook, Vatican Assassin audiobook. And that is all for this time around. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.